Hi, welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we are learning Masechet Moed Katan. We find ourselves on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, that's 17a, and we're right in the middle of the page, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 lines down in the medium wide lines at the end of the line. This series of recordings is a joint project of OU Torah, the OU Department of Synagogue Services, and the Daf Hashua Foundation. Okay, we are in an extended section. In fact, this is our last day of it, our last recording, dealing with the institution of excommunication, which is usually called nidui, but sometimes, as we'll see in our recording today, sometimes also called shamta. In our previous story, which was a long story about a Talmid Chacham, a certain Torah scholar and a practicing rabbi who had a bad reputation for being in yichud with unmarried women, and his bad end that he came to, we mentioned briefly that when they were deciding whether or not to release him from his excommunication, that Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, who was an old man at that time, recalled a story that had happened many years ago in the house of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. This was already two generations later, in which the Shivcha of Beis Rebbe, Rebbe's maidservant, who is a well-known personality, who the sages had a lot of respect and were positively disposed towards her. There was a certain story in which the maidservant of Rebbe had put someone in excommunication, and they had not released him for 3 years. And Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni said that if when the maidservant of Rebbe put someone in excommunication for 3 years, that when Rabbi Yehuda put someone in excommunication, they should also at least honor it for 3 years. So then they decided at that point not to permit this Talmud Chacham for his excommunication to lapse. And he was very sad. And as he left the Beit Midrash, he was then stung by a wasp and died. That was his end. So the Gemara circles back now to the story of the maidservant of Rebbe's house. Shivcha Shabbos Rebbe Mahi. What's the story of the maidservant of the house of Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi? Da'amta debe Rebbe, the maidservant in Rebbe's house, Chazite Lahu Gavra, she saw a certain man, Da'avi Mache Libno HaGadol, who was striking his son, who was older than Bar Mitzvah. He was a grown man. Either Beno HaGadol could mean his oldest son, or it could just mean his son who is already not a child. Amra, she said, Lahavi hahu gavra b'shamta, let this man be in excommunicated. De'ka'avar mishum v'lifnei iver lo titein michshol, because he is violating the halacha of do not put a stumbling block before the blind. V'lifnei iver, before a blind man, lo titein michshol, do not put a stumbling block. What did he do? D'tanya, as we learn in a braita, Rabbi, the maidservant of Rebbe, it seems like it's quoting this braita, maybe because she lived in Rebbe's house, she was used to the conversation of the sages and she had some learning, or else the Gemara is supplying that she knew this, even though she didn't know the teaching of the braita, she knew the principle, and the Gemara is supplying the actual source. Titania, as it said in a braita, v'lifnei iver lo titein michshol, what does it mean, do not put a stumbling block before the blind? So we understand this is not a literal verse. It doesn't mean literally that a blind person is walking down the street and you put something for them to trip over. But instead, what we mean is someone who is in a vulnerable situation, you don't trip them up. You don't put something, you don't seduce them with a bad option. So like a person, as an example, we would say a nazir who is not supposed to drink wine, or for that matter, an alcoholic, you don't tempt them with wine because that's putting a stumbling block in front of the wine. But in this case, the Braisa says, "Bemako livno hagadol hakatu midaber." Here we're talking about striking a son who is an adult already. What is that? What is the problem? The problem is that a son who's an adult already shouldn't be chastised by his father like he's a small child. He might get angry and lose control and strike back at his father. Even if he's just defending himself, he might accidentally, in defending himself, hit his father, and not only striking another person is a violation of law, but striking one's parent is a very serious violation of law. And by abusing his son, he's putting his son in a position where he might accidentally violate a serious transgression, and therefore it's lifnei iver. Now, it's not clear to me if the Shivcha of Rebbe really put him in excommunication. After all, what power does a maidservant in Rebbe's house have to put someone in excommunication? What I suspect is that she pointed out this abusive behavior to the rabbis and the Beit Midrash. She made a complaint, and they put him in excommunication. And probably this was not just a one-time occurrence, but this was a man who was, you know, abusing his grown child. And so they put him in excommunication to get him to stop that practice. In any case, that is the story of Rebbe's maidservant. And according to our previous story, he was in excommunication for 3 years until they finally released him. Okay, now we go to another story of excommunication, which we learn a different principle. We're on the last medium-wide line. Reish Lakish have mintar pardisa. Reish Lakish was once the watchman for a certain pardes, a certain orchard. Now, it's unclear to me if this is Reish Lakish after he became a Baal Tshuva or before he became a Baal Tshuva. I'm suspecting possibly that it's before he became a Baal Tshuva. And at that time, he was, he had periods of his life when he was not such a good person. Anyway, he's watching this orchard. Atahu Gavra, a certain man came, v'ka'achil te'enei, and he ate some of the figs in the orchard. Now, the orchard didn't belong to the man, and he didn't have the right to come and eat the figs, so he was stealing. Rama Beikala, as the watchman, Reish Lakish yelled at him to stop taking the figs and eating them. V'lashkachbe, and he ignored him. He just kept doing it anyway. So Reish Lakish escalated the situation. First wide line. Amar lahavi ahu gavra b'shamtai. He goes, I'm putting you into excommunication. Amar le, the man said back to him, adraba, the opposite. Lahavi ahu gavra b'shamtai. Let that man be excommunicated. In other words, Reish Lakish said, you should be in excommunication. And the man said back to him, no, you should be excommunicated. And he gives an explanation. Im mamon ischayavti lecha. You could argue that I owe you mamon, that I owe you money. In other words, I took some figs and now I have to pay for them. Nidui nidchayavti lecha. But do I owe you an excommunication? So there's a lot of discussion about exactly what the principle here is. But basically, what he was saying is, it's true that I took some figs without permission, but and you are certainly within your rights to ask me for payment. But you didn't ask me for payment, and you didn't even escalate the situation by saying, if you don't pay me, I'll take you to court. All you did was just excommunicate me right away. And this is the problem with excommunication. If it's such an option, people will be walking around left and right, excommunicating each other. So now they had a problem. So Reish Lakish went to the Beit Midrash and Amar Lei, and he presented the case, because now, he, you know, as the watchman, he was responsible. And the rabbis in the Beit Midrash said to him, Shelo nidui, shelcha eno nidui. What he said to you was an effective excommunication, and what you said to him is not an effective communication. In other words, you are under a ban, and he is not. So part of the reason is because Reish Lakish should have handled things differently. According to Tosfot, also the custom there was for people sometimes to take first and pay later. So that's an interesting question. Let's say it's a halachic question, like when you buy a chocolate bar, when you take a chocolate bar in the, because you're in a long line at the supermarket, do you have the right to eat that chocolate bar before you pay for it? So in theory, impossibly one theory is that once you take it and put it in your cart, you own it, and therefore you can eat it. On the other possibility is that you have to pay for it, and before you pay for it, you don't own it, and so eating it is stealing. On the other hand, if it's customary in that time for people to, you know, who are starving to take who are very hungry, to take a chocolate bar and eat it in the line, as long as they pay for it afterwards, then it's permitted. And all you have to, what he really had to do was ask the guy to pay him. On the other hand, we learn a new principle here, that when you wrongly excommunicate someone, you can become excommunicated in return. Now, it doesn't happen automatically, and there seem to be in the halacha some limits, like maybe this guy wasn't just a regular guy, maybe he was an upstanding citizen or a Talmud Chacham or somebody, but under certain circumstances, if you wrongly excommunicate someone, you can become excommunicated yourself. It raises the stakes. So before you go around accusing someone, you could recognize that there is a possibility that, as the old children's rhyme says, that they'll be rubber and not glue. It'll bounce off of them and stick to you. Okay, so now Reish Lakish was in trouble because he was now under a ban of excommunication. Maita Kante, what was his tikkun? How could he fix it? So they said, Zil Legabe, go to him, Delishrei Lecha, and he will release you from the ban, which gives more credence to the idea that this was an important person. He was someone who could, you know, who could put you under a ban and release you from a ban. So maybe Reish Lakish should have checked out who he was excommunicating first, you know, checked out if he was a upstanding citizen or just a ruffian. By the way, in the Yerushalmi, the story is told a bit differently. And in the Yerushalmi, it's clear that the guys who are taking the figs are thieves. So it's a different story, and the Yerushalmi's conclusion is a little different as well. Anyway, Reish Lakish says back to him, Lo, I'm on the third wide line. Lo yadanile, I don't know who he is. I don't know who the guy is. Relay, so they said to him, Zilagabe nisiya, so go to the exilarch, the head of the Jewish community, chief rabbi, Delishrei Lecha, and he will release you, right? Ditanya, as we learn in the Braita, Niduhu ve'eno yodea mi niduhu, if nidahu, if you excommunicate someone and you don't know who was excommunicated, Yelech itzel nasi, go to the nasi, to the president or the exilarch, Viatir lo niduyav, and he will be the one that can release you from the excommunication. So we learned a principle here, and we saw this above as well, that when Rabbi Yehuda had passed away, that you had to go to the chief rabbi in order to get a dispensation. So that is the whole story of Reish Lakish. Now we talk, since we're talking about rabbis putting other people into Nidui, we flip the story a little bit and we talk about rabbis who deserve to be put into Nidui. Unfortunately, sometimes even Chashuv people and Talmidei Chachamim sometimes don't act the way they should, as we've seen on this daf already. And what happens? Amar Rav Huna Ba'usha Hitkino. Rav Huna said, in Usha, one of the Babylonian cities that had a yeshiva, Hitkinu, they made a decree. Av Beit Din, if there is the head of the court, the head of the Jewish court, Shesarach, whose behavior, Shesarach means spoiled. He goes off, he starts acting inappropriately. Ein Minadin Oto, you do not excommunicate him. Ela Omer Lo, instead you say to him, and they quote a pasuk, Hikaved Vesheve Vetecha. So this pasuk, hikaved v'shev v'etzacha, there's a question of whether or not hikaved is related to the word kavod, which means honor, or kaved, which means heavy. So Rashi interprets it as kaved, heavy. In other words, act like you're someone who is sick, like you have a headache, that you can't get out of bed, and go sit in your house. In other words, observe excommunication, stay in your house, don't socialize with anybody, don't go outside, you know, be excommunicated, but we won't officially excommunicate you. Why do we do this way? Because for his honor and the honor of the community, rather than exposing him to the humiliation of a public excommunication, we allow him to observe the excommunication in a private way. But we still want him to do tshuva for what he did. So that's why the conclusion is Chazar v'sarach, if after the first time he goes back and acts inappropriately again, then minadin oto, then you have to excommunicate him mipnei chil Hashem, because it's a chil Hashem. If you have a prominent person or a rabbi who is acting in a way, it's a bigger chil Hashem than if a regular Jew does it, and you can't just let him get away with it. So then in the end, you, if it happens again, you have to excommunicate him. But the idea here is that you give the guy at least one chance. The first offense, you give him a private way, and then the second time, you officially excommunicate him. That's the way they did it in Usha. So Upliga de Reish Lakish, this was, this practice in Usha that Rav Huna mentions is disagreeing with the approach of Reish Lakish. The Amar Reish Lakish, Reish Lakish says, Tamin Chacham Shesarach Ein Minadinoto Befarhesya. A scholar, a Torah scholar, who's acts inappropriately, we do not publicly put him into excommunication. So Reish Lakish felt, according to in Usha, they didn't do it the first time, but the second time they did it. Reish Lakish says you never do it. Shenemar, as it says, v'chashalta hayom, you will stumble today. V'kashel gam navi imcha laila, and the navi will stumble with you also at night. Kasehu kalaila, you have to protect the dignity of the Talmud Chacham as if it was nighttime, in a way that people can't see. That if Talmidei Chachamim are shown to be sinners, it will impinge upon the honor of Talmidei Chachamim in general and the community. So that is Reish Lakish's opinion. I have to say that from my 21st century perspective, I much more resonate with Rav Huna's opinion, which is you can give a guy a chance, but in the end of the day, sunlight is the best disinfectant, and we'll have fewer Talmid Chachamim doing inappropriate things if they know that they will be publicly shamed, and we'll actually improve the honor of the community if they know that when a Talmid Chacham does act inappropriately, that we will, purge him, so to speak, that will disinfect the community and take out the evil, than if we hide it and let it fester. So I definitely resonate more with Rav Huna's opinion and then with Reish Lakish's opinion, but I understand Reish Lakish's Svara. Okay. Marzutra Chasida, Marzutra the Chasid, Kimchayev Tzur b'Merabanan, when he would put a Talmud Chacham into excommunication. So he obviously also disagreed with Reish Lakish, and certainly he felt that when his students acted inappropriately, or other Tzur b'Merabanan, that he could put them into excommunication. But what he would do is Bereisha Mishamet Nafshei. First, he would excommunicate himself. V'Hadar Mishamet Lidide, and then he would excommunicate his student. In other words, he wanted to show them how that he took it so seriously that if he was going to put his reputation on the line to put a Talmud Chacham into excommunication, that he would suffer the same consequence. That he wouldn't just dispense justice, so to speak, without caring about it. That if he was going to put one of his students into excommunication, he would suffer the same fate. But he didn't. What he didn't do is allow these to be a full. We had mentioned earlier that a shamta lasts at least 30 days, and it can also be recurring for more than one term. It sounds like he would do these as a short term, because then it says ki hava ayel b'ushpise, that so he would put someone in excommunication in the morning, and then at night when he went home to his lodging place, shari le lenafshe, first he would free himself from his nidui, and then afterwards he would go back and free his student. So we learn also the principle here, which we'll see in a second, that a Talmud Chacham can put themselves into excommunication. We had seen earlier that someone could put themselves into a nizifa, which is a self-imposed form. But here we say a Talmud Chacham can actually put themselves into a full-blown nidui or shamta, but they can also release themselves from it. So apparently what he would do is, as a kind of a warning to his students, he would put them in excommunication for a day and then release them. But he also would go through it himself as a way of, so obviously he didn't want to do it too often, because how often does a person want to be in excommunicated? Amar Rav Gidel, Amar Rav. Rav Gidel said the name of Rav. Talmud Chacham minad la'atzma u'meifer la'atzma. That's the principle that we said above. A Talmud Chacham can put themselves into excommunication and can also release their own excommunication as well. I don't know why someone would do that instead of putting themselves into Nazifa, but I guess it was one option among many. Okay, finally, and now we get to the conclusion of the Nidui saga. We go all the way from one side to the other. Amar Rav Papa. Rav Papa says, Teiti li, give me my reward. Or in other words, I am deserving of reward. We saw this earlier. Actually, we saw this in Megillah when we talked about people who were explaining why they got such a long life. And they said, Teiti li, let me be rewarded with a long life because I did this certain practice. So what was Rav Papa proud of? Teiti li, give me my reward. D'lo shamiti tzur b'merabanan me'olam. I never put a Talmud Chacham into excommunication. Now, it's not clear to me that he's agreeing with Reish Lakish, because he's not arguing that they should be, that their reputation should be protected. Reish Lakish said, Kaseu Kalaila, protect it like in the night. No one should see the disgrace of a Talmud Chacham. He's saying it differently. Look, Elakika Mechayev Tzur B'Merabanan Shamta, anytime a Tzur B'Merabanan, a Torah scholar, is liable to be put into excommunication. In other words, they did something extremely inappropriate. Hechi Avid, how would we do it? Kihadima Bimarava, we did it like they did it in Israel, which sounds like it was the practice in Israel to do it this way. Mimnu Anagida, they would vote to bring him to the whipping post. The Tzur B'Merabanan, Velo Mimnu Ashamta, and they wouldn't vote to put him into excommunication. In other words, instead they would take him out to the stocks and they would give him lashes, and that was his humiliation. So they didn't cover it up. There was still a public form of, you know, pay of they had to pay up for what they had done. But instead of this institution of excommunication, they got it over with in one go, and they had they gave him lashes. So that was Rav Papa's attitude. And obviously, I don't know how common excommunication was back in those days, in the Talmudic days. Sounds like it happened with some regularity. But over time, this practice has ceased, and we don't have it, I think, in a good way. We don't have it at all anymore. So Gemara now stops and says, since we've been talking about Nidui and Shamta, my Shamta, what is the meaning of the word Shamta? Now, the word Shamta has an Aramaic etymology, but as a way of expressing how severe it was, they do a wordplay with it. Amar Rav, Rav says, Shem Mita, it is the name of death. That is, being humiliated by being excommunicated is almost as if one is being given, is almost being killed. They are, their reputation is being killed, so to speak. Ushmuel Amar, and Shmuel says, Shemama Yiyeh, that they will be desolate. Either way, whether you look at it as Shem Mita, that it's related to the death, or Shmama, related to desolation, it's a very serious punishment. Umahanya Bey, Shmuel says, it affects him, Kitichya Bitanura, like fat, like animal fat in an oven. What Shmuel is saying is that the trauma of going through an excommunication was so severe that it never went away. Just like when you grease up an oven, the grease is absorbed into the walls of the oven and it stays there kind of forever. Like there's a remnant of it. It never 100% goes away. So too, the memory of being excommunicated lasts a long time, or if not forever, then a long, long time. And this could be a positive thing or a negative thing. Either it means the trauma of it never goes away. A person never 100% gets over it. Their reputation never completely recovers, and psychologically they never completely recover. Or it's meant in a positive way, which is the experience of that chastisement has an effect on a person's behavior over time, that they never forget that excommunication and helps them no longer make those mistakes. Unclear. Upliga the Reish Lakish. However, Shmuel is disagreeing with Reish Lakish. The Amar Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says, "Kishem shenichnaset b'matayim ve'arba'im u'shmona evarim." Just like the excommunication enters into the 248 limbs of a person's body. In other words, excommunication is a full body experience. Your whole person is put into excommunication. Kach kishahaya yotza, so too when a person is released from excommunication, yotza mimataim ve'arba'im u'shmona evarim, he is released in all 248 of his limbs. He goes into the excommunication completely, and he comes out completely. You said, Shmuel, that a remnant of, a little oily residue is always left of the excommunication. It never leaves, or it doesn't leave for a long time. And I disagree. A person goes into excommunication, they come out of excommunication. And he brings a asmachta to his idea. Kishehi nichneset, when he goes into excommunication, dichtiv, as it's written, v'hayita ha'ir cherem. It's written, this is about the city of Jericho, Yericho, that after Yeshua conquers Yericho, they put all of its possessions into Cherem. No one is supposed to touch those possessions. Cherem b'gematria, 248 u'shmona havu. Cherem in gematria is 248. This is an example of finding gematria in the Gemara, which occur from time to time. So in Cherem, the chet is 8, resh is 200. That's 208, and mem is 40. That's 248 in gematria. So that's when he goes into cherem. So we're saying that shamta and cherem are kind of the same, but using the word cherem. Kishahayayotza, when he goes out of the cherem or the shamta, dichtiv birogez rachem tizkor. This is a different pasuk from Habakkuk. And he says that after, with the birogez, that the anger, rachem tizkor, he'll remember you with mercy. So the word rachem has the same letters as cherem. Rachem b'gematria ha'chihavu, and rachem is the same gematria because the same letters. So if you just rearrange the word cherem to rachem, you get 248. So when he goes into the cherem, he goes in with his whole body, completely 248 limbs. And when he's merachem, and when there's the rachamim, he comes out of the cherem, it's also his 248 bodies. It doesn't leave a residue behind. Okay, two more finishing up stories related to cherem. Amar Rav Yosef, we're four lines up from the bottom. Rav Yosef said, Shadei Shamta Agnufta de Kalba. You should cast an excommunication upon the tail of a dog. Okay? Ve'ihi, And she dida avda. She did it. So what does this mean? Dahu kalba. There was a certain dog. Dahava achil masani derabanan, who was eating the shoes of the rabbis. Good to see nothing has changed. Today, bad dogs still eat their owner's shoes. And here, these probably weren't the dogs that the rabbis owned. These were probably wild dogs. But the dogs were coming and they were eating up the rabbi's shoes, which is, you know, annoying. Velavaka yade. And they didn't know who it was that was eating up the shoes. Somebody was destroying the shoes. You know, I guess the rabbis maybe took off the shoes when they went into the Beit Midrash, something like that. And their shoes were getting destroyed, and they were very irritated about it. B'shamtule, so they put an excommunication, a general excommunication, on anyone who, the person who was eating their shoes. They didn't know who it was. So this is kind of an interesting principle of excommunication. You can sort of throw it into the void. You can say, whoever it is that's destroying the rabbi's shoes, they're excommunicated. So what happened? Itle be'nura be'genuvte. So then a fire caught on the tail of a certain dog, va'achalte, and singed off his entire tail. Then they knew that that was the bad dog that had been eating their shoes, and he got the excommunication. So the excommunication apparently can go even onto an animal, and it can go even onto someone who you don't know who it is, if you just say that it's a whoever is doing this terrible thing. I don't know if they could do it in some other way, if they could say whoever is spraying graffiti downtown and ruining all the stop fronts, can they be under an excommunication? Can you do that in a general way or not? Not sure. Okay, final story. And this is a very disturbing story. I don't like this story. Hahu alama, there was a certain bully. Alama means a violent person. Two lines up from the bottom. Dahava kametzayle lahu tzorba merabanan, and he used to bully or torture a certain young rabbinical scholar. So I imagine some big tough guy and some little, frail yeshiva boy, and the guy was torturing him all the time. Ata lekami de Rav Yosef. So he came to Rav Yosef to ask him to help. He came to his Rebbe to ask him to help him out with this bully. Amar lei. So he said, Zil Shamte. He goes, you have a power that you can excommunicate this guy. He's terrorizing you. You have the power to fight back by excommunicating him. Amar lei, mistafina mine. He said, I am afraid of him. Meaning, I know I could put him as communication, but I'm afraid if I do that, he'll, punch me in the face. Amarlei, so he said to him, Shakile peticha ale. So he said, don't do it orally, do it written. Give him a peticha, which is kind of like a lawyer's letter. Like next time he threatens you, whip out this document and say, this is a formal document that I'm going to send to the court that's going to put you in excommunication. And that will scare him. He says, Kol shekein de mistafimin. He goes, that makes me even more scared. I don't have the courage to do that to this bully. So Rav Yosef says to him, Shakle achte bechada. So put a note in a kad, a earthenware vessel. Va'achte bikavre, and then put the vessel into a graveyard. V'kari be alfe shipure, and blow 1,000 shofar blasts. Ba'arba'in yomin, in 40 days. So do this whole ritual that is representative that you want to break the bully's hold on you. So the bully himself is represented by the jar, and the note of excommunication goes in the jar. You put it in a graveyard, which symbolizes life and death. Or Rashi says differently, but I think it's symbolizing life and death. You blow the shofar into it, which is the way it used to blow shofar when they excommunicated someone, as we'll see in a minute, for 40 days. 40 days, the Marsha says, is also related to life and death. It's the amount of time it takes for Yitzirat HaVlad, for an embryo to form, and do this whole ritual. Azil avid hachi. So the young student did exactly what his teacher told him to do. Pakakada, the jar at the end of 40 days burst open and broke. Umais alama, and the bully died. So since the bully was represented by the jar, when the jar finally broke after 40 days of shofar blows, so too the bully died. So what's disturbing about this story to me is that clearly the right solution to the problem of his bullying was to excommunicate the guy or in some other way chastise him, but to kill him, it sounds almost as if he took out a contract on him to kill him, or almost as if he did some magical voodoo to kill him. Very disturbing that he would have felt like he had to kill the bully instead of taking some other kind of legal action to protect himself. But that is the story. I have no deeper explanation of it. For now, maybe he had exhausted all other possibilities. Maybe the bully was really going to kill him if he didn't kill him first, and it was self-defense. I am not sure. Let's just finish up The last couple lines, Maishi Purei, why do we blow a shofar when you're excommunicating someone? Shenifra'in mimenu, because we are exacting punishment from him. So Shipure sounds a little like Shenifra. So they make a wordplay that the shofar is taking the justice, carrying out justice to take a repayment from him. My Tavra, why do we blow Shvarim? Tavra means broken sounds. Rav Yitzchak Breid, Rav Yehuda, Rav Yitzchak, the son of Rav Yehuda, said, Tavre Bate Rame. This comes to teach you that excommunication can tear down even tall buildings. I mean, even the most powerful and important people in society can be torn down by an excommunication. Ditanya, as we learn in a Braita, Amar Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel said, Kol makom shenatnu chachamim, any place shenatnu chachamim einehem, any place that the rabbis put their eyes. What this means is, if you get the rabbis really angry, omita o oni, if they put their eyes on you, like the eye of Sauron, it's either death or poverty. Very serious consequences if you get the rabbis really angry at you. And that concludes the whole section that we've been talking about related to excommunication. I'm just going to add one final word. The Ron in the back brings the 24 reasons that the Rambam mentions why a person would be put into excommunication. And what we can see from this list of 24 reasons why a person could be excommunicated is that some of them are more severe than others. In other words, a person can be excommunicated because he publicly shames a Talmud Chacham or because he says something heretical denying the Torah in public. But a person can also be put into excommunication if they fail to repay a debt after they're ordered to by the court. If they are, here's a couple interesting ones. Number 11 is Hamachalel Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galiot Afal Pisho Minhag. Any person who is Machalel the second day of Yontif in the diaspora, that's the 11th, number 11 reason why you should be put into excommunication. Number 12 is anyone who does Malacha on Erev Pesach after Chatzot, if you are working in the afternoon of Pesach. Number 18 is Hamaakev Es Chaveru Milasot Mitzvah, if you prevent your friend from doing a mitzvah. Number 23, as we saw, was a chacham sheshmua Torah, a learned person who has a bad reputation, even though none of the allegations are proven. And finally, the Ravid adds actually an additional one on top of the Rambam, that I'm not going to mention that even. The Ravid adds three more to Rambam's list of 24. But as we can see, some of the reasons why a person might be put into excommunication seem to be more serious than others. Sometimes excommunication is an indication that an act is so seriously beyond the pale that a person has to be excommunicated. And sometimes it is just a way of applying pressure to someone so that they should do the right thing. We'll stop here. Have a wonderful day.